Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how grateful I am you chose to be with us as we take a look at how do we know? And I think you're going to find this an interesting program. I'm very, very grateful. This program is being recorded for July 2nd, 2017. And how deeply grateful I am to my sponsors who make these programs possible. It is only through their loving kindness, their monthly and quarterly donations that make this radio program possible, as well as my TV programs. And if you are not a sponsor and you are enjoying these programs, I hope that you will become a sponsor and help us sustain our program. That's all we're looking for. I'm not looking to spread it all over the world. It is all over the world. It's here on the internet. It is all over the world. So your donations mean a great deal to us. They are tax deductible. And if you go to the Aspire website at aspire.org and you go take a look at support, which is right there staring you in the face, you can click on that. A sub menu will come down and it will say why support Aspire, and it will give you all of the insight as to where your donations go, how important they are, and how deeply grateful I am to receive your gift and what you get for your gift. You'll get the message of the month. You'll get access to the commentaries, the podcast, the video cast, and 122 very, very, very important discourses on the Tao Te Ching, the Eightfold Path, all sorts of things that I did over the years, Cahil Gibran, on the Prophet. There's so many things there for you, and you can download them, use them the way you like, and hopefully they will serve you well, as they have so many people, hundreds of people, over the years that I made these for my Aspire TV program. So I hope you will consider being a sponsor and serving humankind with me. You can help a lot of people by doing this because your donation goes beyond airtime. It allows me to go to hospice and to do a lot of things that are very important for human beings that just need it so deeply, if you only knew. And your gift means that much to so many. I want to talk a little bit here about my work. People are always emailing me about it, questioning me about it. Sometimes they're kind questions, you know, where people are looking into, well, what do you do, and da da da. Most people are, you know, trying to challenge, because I guess the voice of Aspire, which is me, seems different. Maybe adversarial to their beliefs and the things that they want in their life. So I collected three interesting, I think interesting, questions from people that I've gotten over the past few months, and maybe this will answer some of the questions you might have about it. First one comes from Claire. She does not tell me where she lives. How do I process what you teach on the radio and TV, which is so different from what I've been taught by my parents and my own minister slash priest? It would seem that I would be at odds with them if I started to adhere to your teachings, Claire. Claire, you don't need to be in conflict with anyone about my teachings. And my teachings are not mine. I don't own them. They have nothing to do with anything I have created. These teachings have been handed down from enlightened masters, starting with Lao Tzu and going down to the Buddha and Jesus and even into contemporary masters that have been on this planet to serve humankind the same way and help people spiritually awaken. And I don't think people understand what that means. We're not in a fight here. I am not saying what I am teaching you here I own. So these are not my teachings at all. not even remotely. And you must understand that. So you ask me, how do I process your teachings, which are so different than the ones I've been taught by my parents and will say your clergy? Well, you just live them. You practice them. You don't display them. You don't arrogantly take pride in them. You don't do them as a matter of counterculture or counterculture even to your own family. That isn't the way. That's not what we're looking for here. We're looking for here a way to recognize the essence of what you are, the true sense of what you are. Meditating, working upon yourself is a difficult chore for a lot of people. They make it a chore because they have to display it, or they have to be in conflict with it, with maybe the powers to be in your family. But you don't need to do that. That's not what I'm asking you to do. I'm not asking for a revolution. I'm asking for a revelation. And the two are very different. But the sad aspect is, in human nature, you can't have one without the other. So it seems that human beings like to pit themselves against other human beings. They like to make war. They like to make problems. You could take my offerings to you and keep them in your heart. Practice meditation. Live in non-duality. And no one would know. No one has to know. I don't display my practice in front of other people. I've been doing it for years. I used to do it right under the noses of those people who would be most critical of me for doing it. And they didn't know. People are blind and deaf. They don't see. You don't have to worry about that. They'll never recognize it. They'll never know. As long as they are in their own phonetic lifestyle that is serendipitous to their desires, their ambition, their pride, their ego, they're not going to notice. They really aren't. So you don't need to worry about any of that, and don't make that an excuse. That's the key. And what I hear here in this question is, you know, I'm afraid that if I do this, people won't like me, or my family will protest, or my family won't like me, or they'll think I'm crazy. Listen to me, Claire. Honestly, nobody, and I mean nobody, likes you anyway. No matter what you do, they're not going to like you. If you do anything outside the markers of their comfort zone, their beliefs, they're not going to like you. And you just got to know that. That's just the way it is. If you're looking for friendship and companionship in all of this, forget it. If you're wanting people to be in your family encouraging of you, forget it. It isn't going to happen. It's not in their genetic nature. And what typically happens is people fall to their genetic nature. They don't rise to the occasion of their heart. They fall to the degradation of their genetic disposition, which is about DNA and the interpretation of DNA and what they can have and what they can get and how they survive. If you practice compassion, love, and forgiveness, which are a lifestyle, they won't notice. They're too narcissistic to get it. So if you're meditating, they won't even know when you meditate. You do it for a half hour or a couple of times a day, they won't know. Go sit in the bathroom. They won't know. They'll think you're reading magazines while you're pooping. They won't get it. Believe me, your hesitation is you. You're afraid to take that step forward. You're afraid of the criticism of your own mind and emotion. It is what's going on within you. You have imagined separation. You've imagined some kind of, you know, conflict here. There may be none, absolutely none. And why build conflict between you and them, as it were, for no reason at all. There's no reason to create all this mess. So why do it? Live in love. Practice, practice, practice living in love. Practice forgiving. Practice compassion. Demonstrate mercy. And if that bothers them, well, what can you say? What can you do? I've learned to keep my mouth shut. I don't talk about it with people. And I have friends who don't even know what I do for a living. I do. I have people in my life who I am friendly with, and they don't know what I do. And you know what? It doesn't matter to them because they don't care. And I'm fine with that. I prefer that. Because the minute you tell them what you're doing, you become a leper. And nobody wants to be around you anymore. You're weird. You're meditating. You're a navel gazer. You know, they don't get it. So don't let others, Claire, determine or decide for you what you're going to do with your life. Be courageous. Go forward. Live in the compassion and love that lives in your heart. Do something daring, really daring. Go beyond the beyond. I wish you well, Claire. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's interesting how people conform to their families who basically, if you look at it, didn't do anything particularly noble in their lineage. I had one lady tell me, and she didn't know what I did for a living. She said, you know, our family has done so many wonderful things. And I said, well, what have you done? I was curious. And she said, we've had, 12 grandchildren, 15 kids, you know, all this stuff. And I'm going, I roll my eyes on the inside. You know, breeding seems to be something that people are very, very proud of. Really. Ted is the next one, and he lives in Hawthorne, California. Why is it important to believe or have faith? I don't get it, and I don't know if I believe or have faith, Ted. Ted, I don't know if you're talking about belief and faith in the biblical sense or whether or not you're talking about it in the psychological realm. I'm not sure. I'm going to try to tackle both for you here in order to help you. Biblically, the whole idea of belief and faith is based on the idea of emotion and mind, as well as in the psychology of it all. But you are to believe and have faith in what you see and what you hear and in values that you may or may not feel comfortable in adopting. These are a lot of options. I'm just spreading it out for you. So I understand partly what you're saying. You asked me, why is it important to believe? In a biblical sense, it isn't. Not at all. And that's just the way they talked in those days because they did not have the language we have today. The Aramaic language, the Hebrew language, was not as big and as crazy and sophisticated as ours is now. And there's only a few words I think young people know, and they're not very kind. So, you know, there you are there. The words were words, and they were interpreted by people hundreds and thousands of years after the words were said or uttered or written, and it's very hard to track it all down and figure out what was said, what wasn't said, what was meant, what wasn't meant, okay? And now let's take it from the psychological point of view. The only thing that most of us can believe in is in the things that we are emotional about. If we want to be emotional, let's say, about a miracle, and we want a miracle to happen in our life, we try to get that over to our brain. Our brain, our mind, our conscious mind, is connected to the collective unconscious. And it is also in that connected to my genetics and my DNA. So whatever it is I'm trying to believe in or I'm trying to understand or I'm trying to do anything with, basically what I am doing is trying to convince myself of all of this. And in the convincing of myself of all of this, I miss the whole interpretation of the meaning of life and what it's all about. My mind can only interpret things in accordance with my genetic disposition, which comes from legions of human beings that I am related to biologically. And then there is that part of me that is emotional and is connected to the collective unconscious. Now, Ted, if you want to learn more about all of this, read the book Sapiens, okay? Sapiens. Very fun. I've read it 3 times. I love it so much. It will explain many things to you about your nature. It will explain many things about your body and what it means to live in your body. It's a very interesting book about anthropology, and I think it really goes beyond anthropology. It talks about religion, and it talks about economics and government and all of that, and how we make up all this stuff, how it doesn't really exist. We just make it up. We grab it out of our minds, out of the ethers, out of our genetics, and we formulate philosophies and religions and concepts that have nothing to do with the reality of a person's life. Absolutely nothing. But we like to think it does. It makes us feel good about ourselves and gives some order to a disordered mind that is always looking for, you know, some kind of thrill or some kind of emotional gratification or whatever. If you say to a person, would you like to experience the utter bliss of silence? As compared to saying to them, would you like to experience the thrill of being on a very dangerous, ride at Disneyland or Magic Mountain, some kind of ride that would scare the heck out of you. Which one would you rather have? Would you rather taste the sweetness of an exotic chocolate? Or would you rather have the taste of the tasteless, of that which is no thing? Well, most people would hear all of that and think you were crazy for any of that, for thinking any of those things. They wouldn't even understand what you're talking. Of course, I'm going to go with the thrill. And that's the way people are. They go with the thrill. They don't go with the meaning of their life. They don't seek that which is the origins of life. So as far as faith and belief are concerned, you have a belief in certain things about the way you think and how you trust your thinking. And you have a faith in certain elements of probably your human nature, where you're talented here and can do things over there. And you have faith that you can fix things or not fix things, in my case. There's all sorts of ways in which we have belief and faith. But when it comes to the things that are most pertinent to an awakening of something within us that we cannot think, we cannot touch with our thoughts, we cannot touch with our skin, we cannot even, understand it with our logic and reasoning. Now you've got a problem. Now something else is involved, and people have a hard time with that, and they don't do well with it. So there you are. It is important to awaken beyond what you can believe in. It is important to awaken beyond the idea of your mental, emotional, psychological faith. You have to come to a place where you are in the realm of something other than the pedestrian mentality. And that is something that any one of us can do at any moment in our life. And we've had little bumps and we've had little encounters with this kind of stuff, but we didn't know it. I call it the encounter of the unknown. You run up against something that you've never experienced before. A kind of a glint, a kind of a hint, a kind of a rub, a kind of a poke of something that is greater than what you can believe in and what you do believe in. And it's right there within you. And you think, huh, what was that? And then it's gone. The practice is about sustaining what was that and making a lifestyle out of it, which any one of us can do at any time in our life. It can happen. Thank you, Ted. From Hawthorne, California, please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question comes from Jan in Los Angeles. She writes me often. Greg, is God's morals obsolete? They don't seem to be working on our planet anymore, Jan. Anymore? Jan, when did they? Just explain to me, Lucy, when did they? When did anything of kindness and compassion and love ever went out here? I'm confused by what you're saying, and I don't know what you mean. But it's a good question. Is God's, first of all, there is no God that sits in the sky and looks down on people and has his moral rules of the Ten Commandments and all of that. This is something that human beings have created. We like to have rules, and we need them to make our civilization civil. We want it orderly. We can't be running around with guns on our hips and just shooting each other for the sake of the sport of it. The evil that lives within us far supersedes any of our ability to, you know, temper it with with humanity or even kindness. So we can't even go there. So we have created this idea of God. You know, people tell me there's a God. I go, have you met him? Do you know him? Have you talked to him? Have you thought about some of the crap he's done over the years? I mean, women protest so many interesting things. They'll wear these funny little hats that are supposed to be their vaginas and march on Washington. Really? And that did what? That helped what? Huh? But you don't protest the idea that God made you second. God's second little idea. Nobody protests that. This whole idea of God is so crazy. It's one of the biggest fallacies, and it's absolutely nuts. But people need to believe that there's something in charge that can create a miracle that would augment. God is running this thing, and he changes his mind, and he says, oh, little Sally, I think I'll take her. She's 7 years old. What the hell? We want her. Really? Oh, wait a minute. You've convinced me by your fervent prayer that I shouldn't. Well, okay. I'll give that consideration. Like he's the judge, the jury, and the prison, and the whole thing. It's insane. Read Sapiens, please. Anyway, the whole idea of maturing and growing within ourselves is not to live in the obsolete idea that there is a God in charge. There are laws, spiritual laws, and there is an order to this universe, a beautiful order to this universe, that can do many wonderful things and does many wonderful things. And I can't get into it because I'm running out of time. But the deal is this energy of great love lives within you. And that is the only God there is. It is love, kindness, mercy, compassion, and answers to the, we do at least, we answer to this through karma. And whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, we answer to the state of our karma, which is the only God there really is. And when we understand the law of it, we merge with it. And I'm sure I'm going to get some email about this. I'm out of here. If you have a comment or question, just go to the website at aspire.org and you can email me from there. Greg@aspire.org. Have a beautiful, beautiful weekend. I'll see you next week. Please forgive me. Namaste.